Hey, patrons, thanks so much for being a Patreon supporter of us at patreon.com/filmpodcast. What you're about to hear is our full spoilery review of Spider-Man No Way Home, which we are bringing to you early because you are a patron. Now, I just want to note this is going to be the exact same segment that you will hear as part of the regular episode next week. But we'll just have like kind of the beginning components of the episode next week. So if you want to wait until then to hear the full episode, that's totally fine. If you want to listen to this review, then you only need listen to the first part of the actual episode when it comes out next week. But either way, again, thank you so much for being a Patreon supporter, and we hope you're enjoying these early access to these episodes. We really appreciate your support, and again, enjoy the episode. Thanks. That was from the trailer for Spider-Man No Way Home, the newest Spider-Man film by director John Watts. Now, before I read the plot summary or talk about anything about this movie, I do want to say that I feel like the level of spoiler avoidance for this movie is extremely high, understandably so. When reviews of this movie started hitting the internet on Monday, because that was when the premiere was, this last Monday, I saw the phrase deleting Twitter trending on Twitter because people were frantically trying to delete the app in order to avoid any plot details or spoilers about the film.
Yeah. Nobody deletes, though. Nobody ever leaves Twitter.
Nobody ever does.
It's a party you never leave.
But they want to. They want to.
Sure.
So I thought about, like, how are we going to talk about this movie without revealing anything about the movie? And I think, like, we gave up. So you should assume there's going to be spoilers for Spider-Man No Way Home starting right now. And I think this is one you should just go see. Even if you hate it, you should just go see this one.
You should probably see this movie.
Let's just hit the spoiler button. I'm going to just hit the spoiler button right now, just for old time's sake. Here we go.
Now you're looking for the secret.
Trying to see this coming.
No.
But you won't find it because, of course,
you're not going to see this coming.
You're not really looking.
I have been puzzling over how it works.
You don't really want to work it out.
Who's in the box?
I have been dying to tell you.
I want to tell you my secret.
You want to be fooled.
I'm going to read the plot summary from IMDb. Quote, with Spider-Man's identity now revealed, Peter asks Doctor Strange for help. When a spell goes wrong, dangerous foes from other worlds start to appear, forcing Peter to discover what it truly means to be Spider-Man, end quote. Dan Gavazin from the Amazing Spider Talk podcast. You are one of the foremost Spider-Manologists in the world, and I'm very curious, you know, what did you think, what do you think of this latest trilogy, which has been kind of a co-production between Sony and Marvel, with Marvel handling most of the storytelling duties, as far as I can understand. What do you think of this, like, approach to this trilogy with Tom Holland as Spider-Man, and then what do you think of No Way Home?
Well, Dave, I believe my thoughts on Spider-Man No Way Home can best be described in the form of a limerick.
Wow. Incredible. Jeff, how do you feel right now? Do you feel like your thunder is being stolen, or do you feel encouraged at the camaraderie?
Lots of villains just talking from cells, but it's funny and often heartfelt. An origin story complete, finally. All's well, I guess that ends well.
Wow.
Kanata in for
Jeff
the steal.
Just coming straight out. Just
for the
straight
steal.
Out with
the yeah.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Now,
no,
now
actually,
Dan.
Actually, Dave, I have another limerick that I think will explain the first.
Okay. Wow.
Okay.
All right.
I watched No Way Home and then got a message from Dan Gavazdan. He said, let's use our combined superpowers, a Marvel team up against Dave Chen.
What?
Oh, no.
We got you, David. Are you satisfied? Will this finally satisfy you?
I mean, I'm satisfied for the duration of this episode.
Oh, that's fair.
That first limerick was literally what Dan thinks. He sent me his thoughts, and I made a limerick for him against you.
You see, my past limericks have been so ill-received that I felt like I needed to reach out to the master of limericks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah.
Because I know Dave and his insatiable hunger for these.
Yes.
And wanted to, you know, do whatever I could to aid Jeff Cannata by using Jeff Cannata.
It's called a Marvel team up. That's what that's called.
Marvel Zombies from way back
teaming up.
Mission accomplished. So putting the limericks aside and how great they were, which I do think they were great. What are your thoughts on this current trilogy, and then what do you think of No Way Home?
Yeah. Well, I have really mixed thoughts on this latest trilogy. I think it's interesting after No Way Home because I think this is the one that kind of allowed me to put it all in perspective, which is to say, I really think that this movie is like the end of the origin story for this character. And I find that so funny because I thought the whole idea of this series was to kind of elide the like Uncle Ben story and move on with a character with a fresh kind of like, we've never seen it before thing. And by the end of this movie, I found myself cheering because we got back to what I wanted, which is, I feel like we're finally ready to get onto real Spider-Man stories. As much as I enjoyed elements of this, like there are elements of the Spider-Man character that I really have felt have been missing throughout this trilogy. The class struggle of being Spider-Man, mm-hmm. the guilt, just like the difficulties like that Peter Parker faces that make him unique amongst Marvel heroes. And here he had like, he was on the Avengers. He had a benefactor. There was no indication that he felt guilt about anything. And by the end of this movie, all of that is undone. And we get like him. I mean, I don't want to give away like the final 2 minutes, but like.
You can if you want. We're in full spoilers.
Jeff said it in the thing. I think the ends justify the means in some way. I just kind of wish we didn't have to take this long to get there. Mm-hmm. I enjoy a lot of this movie. I have some real problems with particular parts of the plotting, but like I can't help, my heart soared during the last 2 minutes because it was like, okay, like we're finally at Spider-Man as indicated by him putting on the classic suit and living alone in Manhattan and having to make the most difficult choice, which is like the same choice we saw essentially at the end of the very first Sam Raimi movie. And it's like, finally I saw the element that I wanted from a Spider-Man movie, like a live action Spider-Man movie, like all kind of lock into place. And the future for me is on this series seems really bright if it is to continue, which it seems like it must. On the MCU trilogy, I feel there's bits and pieces of it that I think they did excellently. I love Spider-Man Homecoming. I felt like Far From Home was a bit of a deviance. It didn't really know what it was trying to say or who Spider-Man was or is in the MCU. And I think Jeff and I expressed that on our last review. And this one to me, I think it, for me at least, it worked best when it focused on the MCU characters. As much fun as it was to see all the fan service here. And I think some of the MCU characters get short shrift because of that fan service. But by the end of the movie, I was grinning ear to ear and really excited about what the future had to bring. While also acknowledging, I don't think any of these movies will ever be as good as the Spider-Verse movies because those, like, to me at least, upended like my expections for superheroes, what they could look like visually.
The one Spider-Verse movie,
and then the sequel spoiled you forever.
Yeah. We'll see. But like that one movie,
you've probably
like,
seen it already somehow. Yeah.
I won't get into it. But anyway, So that's some brief thoughts on my feelings about this film and the MCU trilogy. And I'm eager to get into specifics with you. But I'm curious to see what everybody else thought.
Mm-hmm. All right, Devendra Hardware, Spider-Man No Way Home, what'd you think?
I really enjoyed this movie, mainly because of a lot of the things you brought up, Dan. I'm not a huge Marvel student, but I've always liked Peter Parker as a character, or at least the Peter Parker as we knew him before the MCU, right? Like he was an average kid who got these extraordinary powers, but then immediately faced a loss. And had to live with that and had to live with the consequences of being a superhero and how it hurt everybody around him. Well, also, he was never super rich. So I think one thing that always kind of kept me back from truly loving Tom Holland Spider-Man is that he's just like happy. He's a little too happy. You know, he's like He's a happy kid. He's got his happy powers. We know he lost his Uncle Ben too, but also,
do we though?
Yeah, I guess we don't know. We don't fully know what happened there, right? Because Ben didn't get to have his little speech, but he has a ton of money. He fought, you know, he saved the universe. He did so many things. And I think it got so far away from like what the core everyday neighborhood Spider-Man thing was always about. I do feel like we lost something there. It is interesting, like where we are at the end of this movie, because it also feels like, to me, more than setting up this Spider-Man again, because it feels like they're almost going to take a pause on this character for a little. This also feels like a very smart way to like wrap up the previous other trilogies, or at least previous other runs of Spider-Man, you know, and we're in spoiler territory. So I'm going to get there now, you know. Of course, you bring in the villains from the Raimi and the amazing Spider-Man movies. Of course, those Spider-Men show up too. And I think a lot of it is like, guys, I have not heard my theater scream and shout since Endgame. Like when Andrew Garfield appeared, people were just erupting. I saw this movie at a 3 p.m. matinee. It was like sparsely attended, but it was mostly teens and probably people who grew up with these movies, right? And maybe like Amazing Spider-Man more than older people like us. But yeah, they
I love that they treat him like the middle sibling. That's like my favorite thing.
Exactly. And then Tobey Maguire appears too, and they erupted again. I'm like, okay, these kids know what's up. And I was very happy about that. And so much of this movie is about them dealing with the consequences of terrible things that happened to them in their movies. And I found, first of all, I had to take a step back and just think like, man, where are we now? Like, to me, this is almost even more impressive than the Avengers thing.
Yes.
This is reaching back decades through other iterations of this franchise to kind of like do interesting work with these characters. And you see that. You see the direct result of that. You see Tobey Maguire try to stop him from killing Green Goblin, like just like he did. You see Andrew Garfield save Mary Jane, or save like one Spider-Man's girlfriend, and immediately reflect on the fact that he couldn't do that for his own. And I found those little moments really touching, the banter they all have together and the way they sort of like compare with each other. Like I really liked watching that. To me, that was a lot of fun, and they did justice by those characters and also knew what they were doing. So to me, it was more than just fan service. Like, they knew what they were doing by bringing in those Spider-Men and giving, I think, Andrew Garfield Spider-Man the best send off I can imagine for him. Like, certainly more than whatever the hell the second movie of that was. And even Spider-Man 3, you know, I think this is a better send off for the Tobey Maguire character than Spider-Man 3. So I just really appreciate all those things. Willem Dafoe, just once again, rocking it. Like, that Ageless. First Spider, so good.
Well, like, I think they de-aged Alfred Molina for sure. I'm curious what they did with Willem Dafoe.
They,
if anything.
They did bunch with Willem Dafoe as well.
Yeah, you could tell. But I always loved the sort of like dual performance he gave in the first, you know, Sam Raimi movie. I'm like, are we going to get that again? And yeah, baby, we got it again, and it was still good. And he also has these moments of just like pure like being almost like a child who doesn't know, like who is aware, like that scene of him with Aunt May, you know, at the shelter was kind of astounding to me, because I was like, man, he's just kind of a hurt character who doesn't quite, he understands fully what's happening and he just needs help. And I think the overwhelming empathy throughout this movie, the idea that the first response here is not to just like destroy or remove these, you know, horrible villains, like some of Spider-Man's worst villains, the first choice is to help, and that choice had consequences, and I found that all really just really compelling to me.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head in the sense that like they didn't just bring these characters back for glorified cameos. Mm-hmm. You know, they could have done that.
Yep.
Some other movies that we've seen this year do that, but they did not do that. They actually brought these characters back, and it feels like there was a lot of reflection about what can we do with these characters that's interesting? Like, how can we pay off these plot lines in a way that's interesting? And I feel like they really accomplished that, and that's what's one of the most amazing things about the film. Jeff Cannata, your thoughts about Spider-Man No Way Home?
Well, Dave, I guess you could say
my thoughts about Spider-Man No Way Home are best summed up in yet another limerick.
Three limericks in one episode, a bounty of riches. Bounty of riches.
Somehow Marvel has managed to fix 20 years of bad Spider-Man flicks. It's so fun to see Andrew and Toby and a fully sourced Sinister Six.
Ooh. Wow. Nice.
Also, I'm really glad we did spoilers right from the top.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'm not sure how you would fit that in, but yeah.
It would have been after
Who's spoilers. The sixth?
Was there not six of them?
There's only five.
Oh, it all crumbles. Oh, wow.
Jeff. Yeah, Jeff, I don't know. What are you going to do now?
It's Doctor fucking Strange, man.
Yeah.
There you go.
I mean, he fought Doctor Strange, yeah.
Who is, let's be honest, a dick in this movie. A straight up dick. All right.
He's always a dick. Doctor Strange is not a great character. He's always an asshole. Is that surprising? I don't know.
Well, I loved this movie, and I think it is an extraordinary feat. It is a triumph. As you guys have mentioned, this thing that rivals or nearly surpasses the Infinity Saga because of how difficult a thing it is to pull off. And it truly is, you know, Kevin Feige, I think, really does feel like he can fix anything, which I'm so glad he's working on Star Wars now, because maybe he will sort of retroactively make it all make sense. But it is unbelievable how it makes older movies that I found so disappointing less bad somehow. These characters feel beloved, and these actors do as well. Even these sort of cheesy versions. I mean, everything is fixed. Even Green Goblin's awful costume is fixed. It's all fixed. And we get this extraordinarily fun movie that I think could only kind of happen. The craziest thing about this movie is that it's for me, right? It only can happen in the chronology of my life and people like me, right? If this movie doesn't land the same way for people that didn't live through the last 20 years of Spider-Man movies.
If you were like 16 years old and you watched this movie, it wouldn't have as much
impact. It would still be entertaining, but it doesn't land like it.
I'm not saying it wouldn't be good. I'm just saying it wouldn't be the same. That's all I'm saying.
It is optimized for 40-year-old people.
I think all of culture is kind of optimized towards 40-year-old comic book nerds.
It's true, yeah.
In our present moment, that is true. But it's a wild thing because you bringing in that baggage is what made this movie special to me. Bringing in all those disappointments, bringing in, you know, having these characters comment on things that didn't work in their own movies. And even wilder than that, this movie is constantly talking to me and all of us here on a meta level. It is literally Marvel talking to us and saying, hey, we had a chance and this is how we chose to take it. It's over now. We don't get to do this anymore. We don't get to play with these toys. We're all going to forget. This character is going to forget that he was ever here. But with this moment, we are going to do our best to fix a character that we feel is beloved and we love. Mm-hmm. This, I mean, the title, No Way Home, is basically saying, sorry, you can't come home anymore, Spider-Man. You are in someone else's hands. Is the magic number, is the song that ends the movie. Works on two levels. Obviously, three Spider-Man are in this movie, but three movies is all Marvel gets. Three is the magic number. That's all we get. It's all we can do. We have to give the keys to the kingdom back to people. The movie
the worst
ends with
people too, by the way. Just the worst. I'm just
Who was behind the Amazing Spider-Man trilogy? Let's not forget.
The movie ends with Spider-Man's face coming at the camera, this glorious feeling of like, we did it. And the first post-credit scene is like a reminder of how Sony is going to screw this up now.
Yep.
It was so bad.
Like, oh. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable that there is a post-credit scene. I mean, We can't even talk about how Venom's post-credit scene is only paid off in the post-credit scene of this movie. It's like, it is so obvious that Marvel is like, you don't get to fucking touch this. And Sony's like, well, we'll just put it on the end.
Then we'll squeeze it in there. Yeah.
We get some stuff. Marvel is constantly communicating. The entire scene with Jon Favreau at the end at the tombstone works in two ways, right? Him saying that no one's going to remember, but it's still worth it because of what this meant to us in this moment. Have you ever had someone and had to let them go before you were ready to be let? It's like, it's Marvel straight up saying, goodbye, Spider-Man. We had our shot. We took 3 was the magic number. That's all we got. We integrated into our universe, and then we erased it. Because we don't get to do this anymore. I found all of that to be so powerful and resonant and interesting. And again, all of this is because all of the baggage of bad Spider-Man movies that I've lived through in my life that are fixed and cleaned and erased and made tidy, all for Sony to just shit the bed again in subsequent years.
The thing is, it's not like everybody's forgetting about Spider-Man, right? To be clear, people are just forgetting about Peter Parker. So I think
Jeff is saying this version of Spider-Man. Right?
I think this is Marvel saying farewell to Spider-Man. I think, I don't know, maybe Dan, you know, do they have the rights to Miles Morales?
They do not. They do have one more film with him. They have a contract for him to be in an event film. So he can have like one more appearance, and there's been rumors that like Amy Pascal has announced.
Are you talking about Spider-Man or Miles Morales, Dan?
No, Spider-Man.
Yeah, Spider-Man. That's what I thought. Spider-Man, Tom Holland may appear in like one more Marvel film,
but Marvel doesn't get, because my understanding, and I could have the timelines wrong, but wasn't Miles Morales created after the deal with Sony, or is it? It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. They get whatever, for example, since Fox had the X-Men series for such a long time, there was a incentive inside of Marvel Comics to de-incentivize the X-Men and the Fantastic Four, which they didn't have. So for a long time, they didn't put out Fantastic Four comics because they were basically handing over creative ideas to other companies.
But I think we've gone over the history before, but just to recap, in case people aren't aware, Sony holds the rights to make Spider-Man films, and they have for a very long time. And
it basically saved Marvel. It saved Marvel as a company because they sold off those rights to stay solvent.
Right, to many different companies, including Sony. Right?
Indeed.
And Sony has had a good run with the Raimi films, but then had a bad run with the Amazing Spider-Man films. And, you know, Marvel came in and basically said, hey, you guys have the rights. We have the actual storytelling capability. Let us make the movies. You can distribute them, which is basically what's happened. But it was apparently a 3-picture deal. And so we've had this amazing, sequence of 3 films plus Peter Parker getting to be in the MCU. And now the 3 films are up, and in that time, as I think we've discussed either on a previous episode or an After Dark, that basically Sony has made 3 hit films in the Spider-Man universe. And so they're about ready for those Spider-Man rights to come back home, I think.
I actually found the Venom post-credit scene kind of uplifting because, if they were truly going to merge these universes, as you're suggesting, why leave a symbiote behind in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, right? Like,
because
why
they have no fucking plan for that. I mean, it was a scene for scene's sake. It was a scene that meant nothing and was intended to mean nothing. It was literally like,
leave this on the bar here, and maybe we'll come back to it someday.
I guarantee you, there's no fucking plan for that.
There's no plan, and they've never had really a plan for the symbiote too. Like, I will never forget Spider-Man 3. He's just like, I guess he falls out of the fucking sky, I guess, and he lands near Peter Parker. I guess that's it. That's what happens. Yeah.
Mm. I do at least think that scene is in character for the Venom character, at least the Sony Venom character, that he would be called into the Marvel Cinematic Universe by that spell or whatever, and he would just sit there and get drunk the whole time instead of, joining up with the Sinister Six. Like, that just seems like that trashy version of that character would just
It's so telling to me that this big reveal at the end of the Venom movie is, oh, he's going to be part of this. And Marvel's like, fuck off.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was quite the dynamic, but he basically like enters this film at the end of Venom, Let There Be Carnage. And then at the end of Spider-Man No Way Home, exits the film, right? Like, as far as I can tell, right?
Well, he's never in the movie. He's only in the post-credits scene.
Exits the universe, I should say, you know?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, Jeff, I gotta say, I got a little emotional you talking about that. You know, it's like, yeah, like, Spider-Man is such a beloved character, and we got to have, like, three decent to great films about him. Mm-hmm. Plus, he got to have fun with our other favorite characters in the Marvel Universe. And who knows what's gonna happen, you know? Morbius is gonna bomb, and then we'll see. We'll see. But I'm not super hopeful we're going to get a lot of great Spider-Man stories in the future.
I can't wait for Morbius, guys. I really wonder what's up with Morbius, the vampire.
Well, you know, Devendra, I feel the same way. And yet at the same time, Venom made $800 million. So I'm like, you know, who knows? Who knows?
When he appears on screen, I will point and say, that's Morbius. Yes.
I hope that when Tom Holland back that truck up to his house with all the money in it, I hope he says no. I hope he says no. I hope we can keep the integrity of this.
I have all the Uncharted money.
I was going to say, I have one word in response, Jeff. Uncharted.
I know. Yeah. And, again, a Sony joint.
A Sony joint. That's right. That's right. The same people. Anyway.
He's already playing
we're going to take a quick break. We're going to take a quick break to thank a sponsor, and we'll be right back. All right. Dan, were you going to say something?
I was going to say that he's already playing hard to get. He's like been releasing these press releases where he's like, if I'm doing this when I'm 30, something went horribly wrong. And Amy Pascal is suggesting they already have a trilogy in the works before walking that back. So, you know, who really knows what's going on?
Well, Jeff, I thought that was beautifully said, but I think the thing to me that meant the most about this Spider-Man movie, which I loved this movie. It's like one of my favorite films of the year. I think for many of the reasons that all of you have already articulated. But the thing that I don't think any of you have brought up yet, although some of you may think, is like the thing that resonates most to me about this Spider-Man and Devendra. Yeah, you brought it up actually. Was like that Spider-Man is about making hard sacrifices. Mm-hmm. It's about like choosing between a normal life and the life of fighting crime. With great power comes great responsibility, et cetera, et cetera. And he has always been a very lonely guy. He's been a lonely character that no one understands. And this movie allowed literally the only other people in the multiverse who might understand what he feels like to be able to like commune with him, right? Mm-hmm. To be able to like hang out with him and for them to like just hang out, share their thoughts about.
Hey man, I get it. Yeah.
Yeah, share their thoughts
about
like what
it's
like. Let's
measure our web shooters. Yeah.
Yeah, all the things that have like, that they've like, lost over the years and all the challenges that it's like, and it's just like there's just something really beautiful. It's like watching kind of a support group in some ways, and there's something also about the fact that all of these people have had varying levels of treatment by the studio system, you know.
Yeah,
I think Andrew Garfield has talked publicly about how he felt done a little bit dirty by the Spider-Man films, like how it didn't go well for him. You know, an actor has very little control over the final product of the movie, right?
Yep.
He shows up, he says lines, he can shape his performance in a certain way, but like ultimately the movie's made in the edit, the movie's made by direction and so on and many other components. And so he had no control over how terrible those films were and or received. And the idea that he could come back and kind of try to do things to redeem that character, I just thought was very interesting. It actively makes those movies better. I'm not going to go back and rewatch them.
No,
but it makes them better.
My memory of them is better
in retrospect. Like we were, Dave, I wonder if you were there too, Jeff, like that Comic-Con, there was a Comic-Con where Andrew Garfield was announced that he would be Spider-Man. And he, as we waited for him to do his like stage thing, the camera pans to, you know, the audience, the line of people who normally stand by a microphone to ask questions. And there's a guy in a Spider-Man outfit reading a really heartfelt letter about what Spider-Man means to him. And it's Andrew Garfield talking about crying about playing this character. And I remember that moment. Like, he clearly was attached to it. I felt so bad that those were the movies he got, basically.
Yeah. Right.
Also love the fact that they allowed these characters to be the age that the actors are.
Right.
Right. They didn't pretend
they didn't de-age the Spider-Man.
They didn't de-age the Spider-Man. They didn't pretend that these Spider-Man were still in their movies. They had progressed in their own universes past that age and were able to look back on that. And you get to have Tobey Maguire as a, what, nearing 50 probably?
Old, 40-something, you know? Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Still having trouble with MJ, too. Like, still on and off, apparently. Like, poor guy.
But I felt that weight, Jeff, right? I felt like it's like an older actor's kind of passing the torch on, giving advice to a younger actor who's about to go through the studio system, right?
I think it's an extraordinarily difficult decision to make. I think as the filmmaker, it's a surprising decision. It's not the obvious decision. The obvious decision was, let's pretend that these Spider-Men are plucked right from their movies into our universe. That would be the obvious way to go. Mm-hmm. And I think it is so much smarter, more mature, more interesting to allow our young Spider-Man in the home trilogy to benefit from this wealth of experience and the gravitas, as you said, the weight of having them be who they are and have gone through a life. It's I'm surprised that happened, and I think it's so brilliant.
The other thing you mentioned that I really loved about it is that the movie clearly knows the conversations that nerds have about Spider-Man.
Yes.
And what I mean by that, like, the biggest example being like the web shooters, right?
Yes.
Like, we all knew that it was weird when Tobey Maguire's version of Spider-Man didn't use the web cartridges.
Yeah.
He just shot webs out of his arms. And the other two Spider-Men use the cartridges. And
yes,
if you're paying close attention, like us on this podcast do, you know that difference. And they bring it up and discuss it at length in this
movie. It's amazing.
And I'm just like, this is so awesome that, like, A, somebody noticed and gave a crap, but B, they're acknowledging it and, like, make it into, like, this humorous moment in the film.
That was, like, a James Cameron idea originally, right, Dan? Like, of the organic web shooters?
I believe so. I mean,
from his, unmade treatment in the 90s, yeah.
Yeah, you can read, like, the script online, and there's a lot of details like that that are just, like, weirdly different. Mm-hmm. I mean, Leonardo DiCaprio as Peter Parker and Arnold Schwarzenegger
It makes way more sense that he would get the powers of a spider and be able to create his own thing. Then also a genius who also invented something no one's ever thought of.
That's what they said. That's what Sam Raimi said. This kid has access to like adhesive technology that like 3M can't even come up with. That's the thing. That was 20 years ago when we basically had no superheroes on the big screen.
Right.
So like people wouldn't buy shit like that as much as they do today.
It was a rough time, guys.
Suits and nobody fucking blinks an eye.
They mentioned nanotech. Doc Ock is like, oh, interesting.
The nanotech
was his doom. Yeah.
That scene made me so angry. Like
with the nanotech suit when it like goes on his arms and stuff like that. Yeah.
That's the way he takes over Doc Ock's thing, is the nano suit just decides it's gonna
Yeah.
Yeah. I honestly don't think the first act of this movie, I was a little worried, honestly, about where the movie was going in the first act. I thought the interactions with Doctor Strange are weird. I was really, really hoping all of this multiverse stuff would have a much bigger tie to Kang than just Doctor Strange deciding to fuck up a spell, you know? Like, by the way, if you have the power to make everyone forget something, are we going to use it on a teenager?
Sure, why not?
Are we going to maybe make them forget, I don't know, to hate people based on how they look?
Listen, did the Eternals teach you nothing, Jeff?
Yeah.
Like, you cannot just control people's minds like that. Yeah. Come
on. Maybe just make people forget that there's any reason to hate people. I don't know. Maybe.
And then people meet other people and are like, I get it.
I mean, here's my thing is they forget Peter Parker, but like, what about all the YouTube videos and cell phone videos of who Peter, like, do they?
Yeah. MJ and what's his name? It's what's his name in the comic?
Ned Leeds.
Ned. Yeah. Do they just like blacked out for the last 3 years of their lives, or what's the deal with that? You know,
Did they still have an MIT letter that says, like, due to recent events, it's like, wouldn't they try to figure out what that was? And what about Facebook? Like, isn't Peter Parker on Facebook? And wouldn't he be friends with a lot of people? Anyway.
You guys need a lot of explanation for magic. The keyword is magic. It's sitting right there.
Yeah, like, they've established multiversey shit, and you don't need to have... I don't know. It felt like... The first act, I was like... I'm getting the rut-row feeling on this, but it totally turns itself around, and it's having so much fun by the time we get two other Spider-Men in there that, you know, the movie is just clicking on all cylinders at a certain point, and it's just a blast.
I agree completely, Jeff, that when it was like the whole thing is because Doctor Strange fucked up a spell, I'm like, really? That's what the stakes are for this?
Well, it's because Peter made him fuck up the spell.
No,
they didn't get into MIT.
He's not. Not anymore.
This is like Suicide Squad, where like they ended up creating the problem that they're trying to solve. Yeah. But like I agree that it's so much fun, and the stuff they do with the other Spider-Man is so good. Now, on that note, Dan Gvozden, I haven't heard you speak extensively about this yet. Like, they bring in all the other Spider-Men, into this movie, and I think, like, when I spoke with you before this podcast began, you know, one of your concerns, complaints with the movie is like it ultimately becomes more about the three of them than it is a story about this particular Tom Holland Spider-Man, right? And I'm curious, how you feel about that.
I mean, like, I agree with all the things that have been said about the, like, just the joy of seeing those characters and seeing their stories, like altered in a way to make them look better. And this really is a celebration of, Spider-Man past and present. And I really love that about it. But I do think that the movie spends too much of its emotional energy on those characters, and some of the beats for our Peter Parker get elided or don't feel quite as strong. We haven't talked at all about the death of Aunt May. And like, for me, I both saw it happening before it happened. I think the way that the moment plays out is really kind of like awkward and anticlimactic. Like, you see her get hit. She's fine. And then she gets to deliver the line, and then she's dead. And it's like, it faked me out only to not fake me out. And I thought that was kind of weak for a moment that's supposed to kind of like radically change the character. And I think the thing that I have the biggest problem with in this movie is, you know, for the past two MCU Spider-Man movies, we've seen this character. I mean, it's interesting how they handled violence in the movies past. They made a real point in Spider-Man Homecoming to never have him throw a punch in the whole movie. He only like redirects other people's punches and or uses his webs. And I thought that was really interesting for like a youthful character. But in this movie, after Aunt May dies, they sent him on this like path of revenge. And, you know, in the comics, Spider-Man has like gotten blinded by like vengeance and stuff, but it's not really truly a part of like the character, especially after you've just learned or supposedly learned the lesson that with great power must also come great responsibility. There must also come great responsibility, because they finally got it right in this one. But in the final moments where he's fighting the Green Goblin and just wailing on him like as violently as possible, I mean, they go out of their way to make those punches like land pretty sickeningly, because you think he's going to like do it. He's going to kill him. And he picks up his glider to stab him. And then Tobey Maguire jumps in and stops him. And there's no signal that Tom Holland Spider-Man would have stopped. Like, he would have gone through with it. And to me, it's like such a false like victory for that character. Cause like, if that's the choice he was going to make, then he's not the hero that I think he is. And he gets the big heroic send off. Like, he, you know, and look, I love the last 5 minutes of this movie where he makes that choice. But I like that particular beat, I found like really kind of unforgivable. Like, I get they used it to redeem the Toby character.
This movie is also Tom Holland's character learning that he shouldn't be that way. Right. And he's still in the process of learning, right?
Goblin is standing in for the guy that the thug at the wrestling thing that kills
the burglar. Yeah.
That, it's a stand-in for that, right? That's the same lesson that he learns when he's too violent with that guy. It's just transposing that onto the Green Goblin.
Yeah, I get that. It's just, like, but like it's followed up with like I just don't think they explore it enough to like earn it. There's no follow up on it. Like, it's just kind of like he gets a hero moment right after that. And it wasn't a choice like of his. I mean, they're criticizing like, hey, I killed that burglar, even though he technically didn't. He
like, fell out of a window.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, but in this one, it was like, oh no, like his intent was to murder the guy. And then we don't see him like change his mind really. I mean, I guess he lets Toby stop him. I don't know. I mean, it's not like I like hated it. It just like really like wrinkled for me in like a way I'm like, especially because this character was shown to be so like not violent in the past. It's just a weird beat for me with like this character who we've already celebrated as being Spider-Man in the past. And maybe that gets to my whole thing where it's like, I still don't really love that they have like basically erased the Uncle Ben lesson and scenario from existence, like to the point that we visit Aunt May's grave. And I guess she decided not to get a plot next to her.
Yep.
Her ex-husband or.
Yeah, no. Fuck that guy. Yeah, we don't want to be buried next to him.
Yeah. And the other spider people like come and they're like, I had an Uncle Ben. And the other, like, I had an Uncle Ben. And he's like, he doesn't say anything. Like, he had no Uncle Ben, you know?
That's true.
Like,
Uncle Ben is in an indeterminate place right now, you know?
That whole sequence, by the way, reminded me of the bit of Into the Spider-Verse, where all the other, you know, alternative universe Spider-Verse spider people said they lost something too, you know, and there is that moment of reflection. And even that movie kind of gets at how core that is to the character, I think. Yeah.
So, Dan, I think that's a totally understandable point of view. I mean, I think what you kind of, as far as I can tell, hold the character of Spider-Man, who's a beloved character that many, many people love, right? Like, you hold him in this esteem, and that he has these kind of essential characteristics in your mind, right? That this movie implies that maybe this version doesn't have. One of which is he doesn't ruthlessly murder some guy that's, like, at his mercy, right? And I guess for me, I don't have quite those associated. Like, for me, I'm like, okay, I'm willing to, like, try to accept whatever version of Spider-Man they give me this time around. And in this case, what they did is they basically used these kind of older, sadder, more bitter versions of Spider-Man to say to Tom Holland's character, don't be like us, right? Don't learn from us. Yeah, learn from us, right? And there's some that to me, there's a trade-off involved there. Mm-hmm. You make the present day version of the Tom Holland character shittier in exchange for being able to kind of have this sort of communal moment between the three of them where they're like, hey, we're going to stop you from in the only way that we can. Mm-hmm. And I found that to be very moving. Now, that said, understood if that didn't work for you, but is it making sense
what
I'm saying?
Like I said, I'm wrestling with it, but I just wonder about the kind of consistency of characterization. Like in Spider-Man Homecoming, we see him like jump into fire to save the Vulture so that he doesn't die. You know, like this guy that like tried to said he would kill him and his family, you know, but then we also see him like kill a space alien in Infinity War, you know, like he gets him sucked out into space. And it's like,
right. Well,
you know,
and also like Thor Ragnarok completely reinvents Thor as like a wisecracking, you know, dude. So I don't know. I guess I feel like I kind of, at this stage in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I'm willing to like accept a kind of malleability to these characters, depending on the story that they're trying to tell, you know?
Yeah, I think I do too. It's just like, I always kind of just like, I'm trying to figure out like the character that they're presenting. I mean, this is like like modern myth, right? And I want to understand what they're trying to say with this character, right? We've been saying they had one shot, right? Or three shots or whatever. So like, what is their like version of this myth that they're trying to present to us? And is it coherent? You know? And I think they did, like, again, I'm saying, I think they did a great job. I'm just trying to understand like what it is they're trying to say and how they present it. I mean, Jeff said it in his limerick, which is like, with great IP comes great responsibility. And yeah, I do hold this character up because I don't see him. Like, that was my problem with Far From Home, was in that movie, I felt like they treated him just like any other superhero with spider powers. Mm-hmm. Right. And this movie, I think, gets it far more right. But yeah, anyway, I'm always critical of it, and I'm trying to wrestle with, like, okay, well, how comfortable do I feel about with that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, always good to hear your thoughts. Yeah.
Yeah. Appreciate your thoughts for sure, Dan. One of the most powerful moments in the movie to me is they pulled a Eternal Sunshine at the end of this film, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which I obviously love that movie, but to me, I was, and I think, you know, Dan, you probably agree. Like, you've said basically that the end of this movie finally completes the origin story of Spider-Man, right? Of this version of Spider-Man. And I think there's a lot of truth to that, because the end of this movie is him seeing his friends and realizing that they are better off without him, right? Or mm-hmm. that they're better, their lives are better not knowing him. And that is, like, such a tragic idea that's, like, so heartbreakingly sad, but it's him making the ultimate sacrifice, right? Of his personhood, his friendships, in the service of the greater good. And mm-hmm. I don't know. I just found that to be, like, really moving, you know, and a really good performance by all actors involved at that moment.
Yeah. All that Mary Jane will remember is the world's most awkward coffee order. You know,
plus this bump on the noggin she got for no reason that she can remember, right? Yeah.
I think, like, you know, this series has always been about, like, what it means to be a kid. You know, like, Spider-Man Homecoming is about when you're, like, a teenager, you can only think about being older, right? You always mm-hmm. want to get ahead in life. And he talks about, like, dropping out of high school so that he can become an Avenger. You know, he's and the lesson of that film is you got to be comfortable where you're at, right? And at the end of the film, he rejects the costume. And I think it's, like, for me, that was, like, the biggest fist pump moment in the, like, the MCU series until, like, the end of this movie. And the end of this movie, we see him truly become Spider-Man. He's not a kid anymore. He has, like, moved out, like, on his own. You know, he is no longer in high school. There's, like, you know, tokens of his childhood in his room, like the Lego Emperor Palpatine, the cup of coffee. You know, these are mementos from his childhood, like many of us have when we go to college, is, you know, like, we leave our hometown behind, or we, like, move on from, like, friends and embrace, like, a new, different kind of lifestyle. And, you know, he walks up the stairs and he hears someone shout, like, "Where's your rent?" You know, just like in the, you know, the Raimi trilogy. And it's like, okay, like, he is, like, if they move forward with this, it's going to be about who is Spider-Man as an adult now.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And, like, he's sewing his own costume. He's going to truly do it on his own without, like, Tony as a parental figure that is helping him out and supporting him, you know, like, and all of those things were calculated. And that's why, for me, the end of this movie is so strong, is it finally, like, that clicked for me, like, oh, I see why they, like, haven't embraced, like, the guilt, the uncle, like, they were holding it all back because that was all kind of, like, the culmination of childhood. And now that's going to move on to something else. And, you know, whether it's in the MCU or not, like, I think that statement is really profound in the final moments of this movie.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So there were a few things that I felt were weaknesses in the film. Like, overall, I love this movie. I thought it was amazing. Recommend everyone sees it. There were a few things that I thought were kind of weak. I feel like this is yet another Spider-Man movie that kind of ends with a bunch of CG mess / nonsense. And you compare, like, Spider-Man movies to, you know, Captain America movies, for example. And I just feel like the final battle sequences, or just the battle sequences in general, there's obviously a lot more hand-to-hand in the Captain America movies, and it just feels a lot more real, I guess, more visceral to me.
Mm-hmm.
I had that moment, Dave, when I was like, I told these guys that if they remade the Burly Brawl now, it would look good.
I told you no. I told you no,
you did,
sir.
Tell me no. I was like, nah, I guess Marvel can't even do it.
Every movie we've
everybody
seen.
Everybody looks, like, the same. Mm-hmm. And the, like, the Statue of Liberty, like, the scaffolding, like, I had no understanding of the geography of that sequence.
Mm-hmm. What a cool idea, though, that they are replacing. I mean, it's transgressive as hell, but the idea that they would put Captain America's shield. I mean, talk about Talk about a corporate entity that has no fear of backlash.
Yeah.
But
in the world, I think it makes complete sense. You know,
it does make complete sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, it is certainly calling your shot. Disney is like, I want that. I want a Statue of Liberty. I want Mickey Mouse's face on a Statue of Liberty. I want Captain America's shield.
Uh-huh. Our character is more important than America.
Than America. The same shield that just decapitated somebody on TV? Like, man. Well,
it was a decapitation as much as they beat someone to death with it, I think.
They cut away. They didn't really show it. But if you put a very sharp shield straight down on somebody's head... I'll leave it up to you guys.
Yeah, Devendra knows from personal experience what happens in that scenario.
So. Listen, I chop meat all the time. Like, it's bad news. Bad news, guys. Come on.
Chops meat with a shield.
I do. Say, yeah. Wait till you see what Marvel does with the dark side of the moon, because that's coming up.
Oh, boy.
So I think the action scenes are fine. Like, there's some cool moments, like when he's first getting away from Otto Octavius. Like, that's really cool. When, you know, on the bridge, like, all that stuff was pretty fun. But I just can't shake the feeling when I'm watching these movies that this is just a bunch of CG stuff and like there's no one actually physically doing any of this.
Which is kind of a
bummer. And
I think that's half the conceit of them being in cells for so long is they couldn't get these actors in the same place. So they're like, we can just record them in booths and we'll just put them in cells.
I also like how Jamie Foxx is like, okay, I'll come back and do it, but I am not looking like that nerd dude anymore.
I know. You know?
Give me
so
a makeover.
Yeah, no explanation, except they do comment on it, which is like nice, but you know, yeah, they're just like, yeah, he's different looking
look
now
pretty.
For some reason. Yeah. He's a whole different person now, which I guess is explained in Amazing Spider-Man 2. So.
We didn't talk about Charlie Cox. That was a nice little moment. Daredevil appears in this movie.
Someone in my theater literally screamed.
Yeah,
when that happened.
People,
when Charlie Cox
appears
on screen, somebody. Mm-hmm. So this is a press screening with like 30 people in it. Somebody in the back row was like, "Oh!" Somebody was like, "Oh!" Like just literally just screamed when
but that's
Daredevil
what's so,
appears.
I mean, you can disagree with me if you like Dan, but I feel like that to me is what is so joyous about being a lifelong comic book fan that is experiencing these MCU movies in real time. It's like. That's something that would happen in the comics because it can and it's easy. Does he need a lawyer? Oh yeah, we have a lawyer character. Of course, his lawyer is Daredevil. Like that's our lawyer character, or you know, be She-Hulk or whatever. It's like in the comics, it's the other character can just be there because they're there and they function, and you just have to draw them. And the fact that somehow the contracts that seem impossible are worked out by this massive mega corporation make it possible. It's mystifying and magical to me.
It's just too bad Spider-Man will never see Daredevil again. Like it's just that one meeting and never again.
I was talking to Dan about how impressive this movie is as an act of film production. Like from a producer standpoint.
Logistics. Yeah.
Yeah. This is one of the like legal and actor and all these logistics. It is extremely impressive. And also, did you guys notice that the closing credits, the end credits of this movie ground to a halt to say, hey, the filmmakers would like to thank Avi Arad for his contributions to bringing Spider-Man to the big screen.
I laughed out loud in the theater.
Right. So I think I talked with Dan a little bit about this, and I think our operating theory is that Avi Arad, for those who don't know, was instrumental in bringing Spider-Man into the big screen via Raimi's films and has since kind of not been a part of the franchise. And so probably they're like, you know, Avi Arad was like, how dare you make this movie without me? Yeah. And they kind of threw that in to kind of make
they're
him
like,
not be angry.
What will it take to let us do this? And he's like, well, you must fillet me on screen. And they're like, okay, no problem.
You must give me an end credits acknowledgement, unlike any special thanks. It can't just be special thanks, me and 500 names. It must be a whole separate card.
A whole
that's
line.
About all the stuff I did. I think that's probably why that happened. Is my guess.
Jeff, to your point, I absolutely agree with you. In fact, like that was one of the Easter eggs on my list. Amazing Spider-Man 219, Daredevil is Spider-Man's lawyer.
Yeah.
I think that's really magical. For me, I was just thrilled because like I love the character of Daredevil. I think it's Marvel's character with the best written stories. And to think that Daredevil was just locked into this Netflix show and we wouldn't get that character again, I think was a real shame. And
what about the Defenders, guys? We never talk about the Defenders.
When is Iron Fist going to show up again?
Man. Anyway,
I also think it's funny that clearly Thomas Hayden Church could not be bothered. I'll do some VO, but that's really it.
Well, he does show up in that one scene at the end.
Does he? Right? I think that's still CG.
It's a youngified version.
I think it's still CG Thomas Hayden Church.
They got a body double and they put Thomas Hayden Church's head on it.
I mean, they have the technology. We could be doing that right now, you know? So, yeah.
And the other thing that I really liked about the movie, I mean, I'll expand on something earlier I said, is, you know, I love that even the fact that, you know, the other Spider-Men, I love just that the movie kind of acknowledges and in some ways celebrates the difference between the three different franchises, the different versions of the character, right? The web shooter coming out of the arm, the fact that the first two Spider-Men don't even know who the Avengers are.
Yeah, that's acknowledged, that was awesome. Right?
That was so funny. And I love the little talk that I think Thomas Hayden Church's character and Jamie Foxx talk about, like, oh, like I fell into a vat of eels, and he's like, you got to be careful where you fall. Hearing all these characters describe their end, it did strike me kind of how violently all these characters died in the other Spider-Man movies.
And
I think that this movie's plot tries to like reckon with that in some way, right? It tries to basically say like, hey, like maybe we shouldn't be killing all these guys off, you know, like that there's perhaps a more compassionate way to go about this.
He's Spider-Man, not Batman. Okay. Yeah.
I couldn't help. Well, Batman's not supposed to do that either.
Not supposed to. Yeah.
You know, somebody has to tell Zack Snyder, but the other thing that I couldn't help but think, as I was sitting there is what other IP could you do that? Like, could you have all the Bonds in some sort of crazy multiverse?
Well, they just did it in Superman on TV.
Oh,
like
that's
they did
right,
the
yeah.
Superman meetup. Like,
yeah, that's true.
We have, here's the thing. We have so many things now that you could do this with, Jeff. Like, yeah, you could do this with Bond. You could do this with X-Men at this point. Like, and they already made a series of that. But, you know, like we have so many iterations of these same characters over and over again. To me, what was just so compelling is that, hey, they actually like did good by bringing these all back together. I can't imagine like Tobey Maguire thought he'd ever be like associated with Spider-Man again. You know, and I'm kind of glad he got a bit of that.
Don't encourage them to do this with all these other franchises.
It was great too, because I definitely thought, oh, they weren't going to be able to talk Tobey into actually putting the suit on again.
Right.
And then they made a gag out of that, you know, like it's.
Yeah. I mean, there are so many moments when my brain was exploding. Like when, when Matt Murdock shows up, someone in my theater is screaming, my brain's, I'm like, how did they even make this happen? And how does it all make sense? And then when the Spider-Man show up, I'm like, I'm freaking the F out. And it just was such a joy to watch the movie. It was so funny too. Like there were so many jokes commenting on like the ridiculousness of this entire situation that they're in.
Yeah.
I really just had a great time.
That conversation about fighting an alien, you know, I fought it. What's the weirdest bad guy you fought? You know, that was such an awesome conversation.
I've been to space.
Yeah. It shows the privilege of the Tom Holland Spider-Man. Like such a spoiled brat.
Like, I can't even pay rent, and this guy's going to space.
It's going to space. Yeah.
Andrew Garfield.
I was going to say, by the way, one of the moments when I really freaked out was when they brought back the Danny Elfman theme.
Yeah.
Yes.
From the Raimi Spider-Man movies. There's a moment when the biggest moment I can remember this is when they finally like inject the Sandman or whatever with his freaking cure. And then you hear the Danny Elfman theme. It's unmistakable. It's a beautiful theme.
It's great.
And I was like, just had chills. Cause it's like, I remember being so excited. Like those first two Spider-Man movies were great, you know, watching those movies. And like this movie really made me think of that in a really profound way. So
this was a great movie to watch with an audience too, because this is a movie that speaks to the generations of people who have been, you know, watching these Spider-Man movies. And I'm here, you know, older guy, I'm not quite 40 yet, but I'm getting there. And, there are teenagers behind me like lapping all this up. And then there are these really young kids who are growing up just entirely with the Tom Holland Spider-Man, and everybody's just like enjoying it. And certainly like not everybody's getting all the jokes, but what a cool experience that everybody gets their own Spider-Man and they can kind of enjoy them all at once. I really appreciated that. Yeah.
It sounds like the movie works for people who haven't seen the other Spider-Man movies, right? So that's really cool. That's really cool.
I loved the incredibly meta joke of Andrew Garfield giving Tobey Maguire a back massage.
Oh my God. That scene. The fact that they just sit in that scene for so long is so great. It's so great.
I mean,
but Dan, what's the meta joke for those who don't?
Yeah, so like in like filming of like Spider-Man 2, right? Like they like Tobey Maguire, like he hurt his back in Seabiscuit and was almost not going to return in Spider-Man 2, and they like basically recast him with Jake Gyllenhaal. There was like an argument with the managers and they worked it out and got him back, and then in the Spider-Man 2 movie they made fun of it by having him like jump off of the building. Like I said in my intro, I'm back. And then he falls and hurts his back and he goes, my back.
Yeah.
And so like it both works as like a reference to that in the Sam Raimi movies and a reference to like Toby's own like crises with maybe losing the part. So I thought it really comes down to
Jake Gyllenhaal just trying to rip things away from people. Like that's
absolutely.
Yeah. So much of this.
Wow.
Double meta. Damn. I mean, you guys were talking about the first act of this movie. It is weird to me that at no point Peter Parker decided to just like say, "Hey guys, that's not true. None of that is true." Instead, it's something. Do something. Hey guys, I helped save the universe. At least give me some credit. Give me some credit to like say my piece here. Instead, they hide in their easily findable apartments and a weird condo for some reason. Like a lot of that stuff didn't make sense to me. It is sort of like Doctor Strange saying, "You'd rather cast a magic spell than talk to the people at MIT." It seems like a lot of this movie even could have been avoided if Peter Parker was just like, "Hey guys, yes, I am Spider-Man, but hey, that's not true." And they have all this. They have footage from the drones. They can prove this. Come on.
I don't know, Devendra. Do you live in this universe where people go on TV and lie and people believe it all the time?
I mean, yes, except I think at certain points, people at least try to say, "Hey, no, that's a lie." And Spider-Man was too afraid to say that, you know?
Yeah, I guess that's fair. I don't know. He's just a kid, something. So.
J. Jonah Jameson certainly would have loved to have him on his podcast. You know, and that's
I do like
what
that he's a great kind of imitation of Alex Jones. I thought that's like that would be who J. Jonah Jameson is today. If
he's a bugle supplement. Oh my so god, yes. I lost it.
It's very good. And he starts off as basically a nothing podcaster, right? The first scene is just him with a crappy green screen behind him, and cut to later on, he has a full Fox studio behind him. It's amazing.
This is actually one of the first movies I've ever seen where playing the video game of the character gave me a greater appreciation of the movie. Maybe one of them, one of the instances in which that's happened. But like, I played the Spider-Man PS4 and PS5 games, and the fact that Aunt May works at Feast, is a key plot point in those games. And now I have all that backstory filled in for me. It's like, oh, she does like helping other people, So.
Just love that, like, I get to listen to Dave Chen talk about Aunt May working at Feast. Like, what universe do I live in right
what
now?
What universe? Yeah. Yes,
I'm aware of this now. So on that note, I don't know that this trilogy has done honor to Aunt May, but this one at least gave her some shit to do.
Gave her some stuff to do. Marissa Tomei does not have to do much, to be honest. Like, just she is instantly compelling as Aunt May, but I would have loved to see her do more in those earlier films for sure.
This version of Aunt May doesn't make as much of an impression story-wise original one in the Raimi films, I would say.
I don't even know if I feel like her delivering that line makes sense to that character. My understanding of her is she's kind of like, a bit freewheeling, kind of like not punk, but like kind of like former hippie, like to see her kind
free
of like
spirit.
Moralizing like that. Yeah. Like, I don't know. I don't think she would not say that, but I was like kind of surprised to see her like kind of get a line of that like import from a character that like we've really only seen as kind of being flirtatious with Happy. You know,
yeah, it's true.
That's fair enough. That's fair enough.
Would have loved to see her give him some actual lessons. Yeah, in the previous films.
I mean, I think about like Rosemary Harris from Spider-Man 2, mm-hmm, and like mm-hmm. the speech she gives Toby when they're packing.
So
up
good,
her so house. Good. It's really yeah, so powerful. It, like, I was so yeah. moved by that. And yeah, by the way, here is a movie pet peeve that this movie did not do. Okay, it always bothers me when in a movie. That people are waiting, like high school kids are waiting to hear back from college, and they all get these thin envelopes.
Yeah,
and it's like, oh, are you going to get in or not? If you, you know, spoiler, if you're in high school listening to this, but
the
basically,
thin envelopes
if you get
are
in,
bad. Yeah,
if you get into a college, they don't send it in a thin envelope; they send a huge packet of shit.
Yeah, they send you a brochure.
I'm always
thing,
so annoyed at these. Like, we're building up to this massive scene where we open up the letters, and oh, did they get in? And it's like, mm-hmm. oh, you got accepted in this thin envelope. Nope, that's not how it plays out. So I was like, oh, David Chen, prepare to be annoyed by the fact that. They all have thin envelopes, and one of them's going to get in. But then I was like, nope, none of them got it. I was like,
they
nailed
got packets.
Movie.
You know what? I remember the day I got my college packet, and that was the journey that started me towards meeting David Chen. Yeah. You know? So, like, that's important stuff. You remember
exactly.
Those
you
things.
Want to get those details right, I think is what you're saying.
Get those details right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I all also David think Chen had to do was make a deal with a wizard.
Yeah. The other thing that's pretty amazing to me about this movie is that Zendaya, who, mm-hmm. you know, if you've seen Malcolm and Marie or even mm-hmm. or even Dune, you're like, that is a woman. That is a woman. And this movie is like, oh, no, that's just a little girl.
she's supposed to be a high schooler in this.
Yeah.
She is. Right. Somehow they make her this like powerful, statuesque, stunning woman. Feel like this girl, a high school girl. It's amazing.
You guys have not seen Euphoria, and I would highly recommend you watch Euphoria. But also, as parents, it will certainly terrify you, Jeff. She is incredible in Euphoria. So she is what, mid-20s now, but she could still conceivably play a teen. But she is also at this crossover point where things are weird. Things are just very weird.
I liked that ending sequence with where they say goodbye to each other. I thought it was actually genuinely moving. Mm-hmm. All that stuff at the end I thought was really powerful stuff. So, all right, folks. Anything else in the movie? Dan Gvozden, anything else you wanted to mention about Spider-Man, or shall we wrap it up?
I think it's a good place to leave. I mean, this movie has really been growing on me. And talking to you guys, like, I just find more and more to appreciate about it. And I'm looking forward to seeing it in theaters again and really, like, you know, I mean, look, I've done a show for 10 years about Spider-Man. So, like, it's easy to say that I wrestle with interpretations of him. And this is one that I'm very eager to return to and keep thinking about. And I at least think that that's a sign that they're like doing it right. Like, they're not doing this like half-assed. Like, they've really thought and considered what it is they're doing with this character.
Mm-hmm.
I think the future is dim. For this character.
little inky black. Yeah.
We had a good run, Jeff.
I think these three movies really were wonderful, but man, I think we're in for some terrible Spider-Man movies coming.
I agree. It's really a bummer. But hey, you know, don't be sad that it's over, smile that it happened at all, you know?
And like Dan said, we still have Into the Spider-Verse, baby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. At the end of the day, it's still pretty impressive that John Watts made a movie. So
yeah,
I think we can wrap it up there. You can find more episodes of this podcast at thefilmcast.com. Email us at /filmcast@gmail.com. Back us on Patreon at patreon.com/filmpodcast. Our spoiler bumper comes from filmmaker and YouTuber Kyle Corwith. Our weekly plugs music comes from Noah Ross. This episode was edited by Beatty Zhang. Dan Gvozden, thanks again for joining us today. We really appreciate it, man.
Yeah, I always have fun, and you know, don't despair too much, Jeff, because even if we get bad Spider-Man, we're going to get a new Spider-Man movie every year or 2 years. So,
it might be bad, but at least there's going to be a lot of it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, eventually they're bound to hit every now and again, and I'm looking forward to joining you guys for those conversations.
All right.
Oh, that just means you'll be with us more often. Okay, now I think that is good news.
Oh, see, look at that. See, what a way to look at it.
Next week, we'll be discussing The Matrix Resurrections on this podcast. Matrix Resurrections. Have a pretty awesome guest for that one, and hopefully it all works out. And hopefully we are going to be able to get our patrons that review early if we can. But tune in for that. And until then, we'll see you later.